We'll just briefly review what we covered in the last session. We are discussing chapter 10, right? We did 1 to 3. So some few points. Okay. So opulence of the absolute. So Krishna is talking about his opulences in this chapter. So why? What are some of the important points from the first verse?
Nathalie, you were talking about why we should hear about the glories of the Lord.
Mm.
So, one of the points were to inspire us to get closer to Him once we know His opulences.
Still Him.
And it increases the devotion service.
Yes, increases. Yeah, when we hear about opulences of the Lord, then we will be convinced that I can surrender to such a person.
Trust.
Right? Yeah, trust. Yeah.
He's
going to take care.
Krishna is telling just for our benefit.
Important point is, he is explaining that it's only for our benefit. It's not like, you know, not like Krishna is an egotist, he wants to boast about himself. You know, what, when we hear about Krishna's glories, it removes envy from our heart and it gives us that love, you know, but that's our constitutional position. Then some more points. So you say, why Krishna is revealing this knowledge to Arjuna? He says some clause there.
He is the dear friend.
My dear friend. So he's saying, is my dear friend, that's why. So basically already he is eligible because he doesn't have envy. Only when we are non-envious, we can hear somebody's glories. Right? Otherwise we become more envious of towards them. So that's why, you know, that's why Arjuna, one of the qualifications Krishna says is, you know, your bhaktosmi sakha cheti. You know, you are my devotee and my friend. That's why I am revealing this knowledge to you. And why Krishna is saying here, I am giving knowledge that is better than what I have already explained. We discussed 9th chapter to be the most confidential knowledge. You know, it's talking about pure devotion service. Then why here he is saying this knowledge is better than what you have already explained? In what way? We discussed one phrase, what it means. Anybody remembers? So basically what our teacher mentioned is that in this chapter he is going to give more details by which we can be fixed up in the devotional service. Right? As if like previously he made a safe statement. Okay, you manmana bhava, you remember me, you render service to me, you always worship me. Give one statement. How to do it, you know, with what conviction to do it, it's not clear yet. In this chapter he is going to give all this, you know, you do all this because I am the supreme, you know, I am the best, I am this, I am that. You know, I have so many opulences. He will explain all this by which that devotion becomes more ingrained. That's why this knowledge he's saying is better than what I've already explained. Because it's more details. Okay, so some other points, anybody remember from this? That's enough, right? Text number 2. Yeah, he says, no, neither the host of demigods nor great sages know my origin. Because why?
Because he is the creator of everything. No one knows the origin of him because he is the origin of
everything. So nobody can completely figure out their parents, right? What they did in the childhood, everything. So because Krishna is the source of everyone, nobody else can understand Krishna until it's revealed by the father or Krishna. So that's what he's saying here. Nobody can really know. Why he is emphasizing this verse is that actually what I am going to tell is such an important knowledge that nobody knows actually unless I reveal. And I chose you to be the person to listen to this. You know, they to emphasize that this knowledge what you are going to hear is very special. Nobody actually knows about me unless I tell, and I am telling you now. So text number 3 is telling about again same thing. Who knows me as unborn, beginningless, supreme lord of all the worlds? Only such a person becomes free from all sins. So he is talking about, you know, who can be free from all sins. The only person who knows him as a supreme is actually really free from sins. So generally, you know, we have a notion of piety in the world, right? Okay, people who are calm, don't shout, you know, they are, see, we think they are pious people, right? But here that definition is being kind of challenged here. Krishna is saying people who know him to be as he is, like the supreme, you know, as the person, as you know, supreme lord of all the worlds, only one who is convinced about that is the one really pious. So other people who, if they have half thing, or you know, if not completely convinced about Krishna or something else, so called, they may be materially, you know, seemingly pious, like, you know, they have wealth and they have good progeny and all these things, and they keep giving lot of benevolence to others and things like that, seemingly pious, they are not really pious because they have so many sins still. Right? Real sin is envy towards the Lord. Okay, so that's text number 3. Any other points?
Okay, we talked about the 4 steps, you know, the sequence of how, you know, Krishna reveals himself.
Oh.
So, you know, we start with devotional service.
Mm.
And that frees us from the sin.
Mm.
And then
we become
determination.
Yeah, yeah.
And then finally Krishna reveals himself.
Yeah, very nice, yeah. See, because see, here we discuss, you know, it's a cycle. That verse which talks about Esham Tvantagatam Papam 7.28 or something, right? That verse, he says, unless one is freed from sins, one cannot be fixed up in determination. But then, at the same time, in order to even do devotional service, one need to be freed from sins. Then how is the whole thing will work out? Right? So, where do we start? Right now, for example, we have all the sins. Does that mean, you know, I cannot... So, the thing is, we begin devotional service. That devotional service will free us from the sins and makes us eligible, by which we can be more determined. Then eventually Krishna, when we are fixed up in devotional service, then Krishna will reveal himself. We know Krishna as he is, as given in this verse. It's a very nice sequence. Any other points? Text number 3.
So it's like, I just have a question. So knowing Krishna as unborn and simultaneously knowing that the spirit soul never dies, so do these knowledge comes together, or like first you know that when Krishna, like when you know more about Krishna is when you realize that you are also, that like you will never die actually. So you will stay eternal. You live eternal.
This knowledge we know now, like, you know, we know, theoretically we know, like, okay, Krishna doesn't take birth, Krishna doesn't die. You know, Krishna is eternal, we are also eternal. We know actually in second chapter only, right? Krishna says, you were always there before, you are there now, you are there in future. We know even in second chapter. Knowledge is given, but you are talking about realization, you know, when we have that realization that we are actually eternal, you know. That realization, we get it in different degrees, actually, as we advance. So how do we measure how much realization we have in that is we can see from our actions. Like how much actions we do, how many of our actions are more spiritual versus material. If we really believe we are eternal beings, you know, servant of Krishna, then our actions should show like that, right? But if we still believe that we are this body and everything related to this body are my, you know, duties, main primary duties, and these are my main obligations and this is my main goal, then that's what our life will show. Right? That means we still don't believe that actually I am eternal being. I still believe that I am just, you know, this Sangeeta in this world, the wife of this person and mother of this child. Right? We just identify with those roles. But we don't rise above and identify ourselves as servant of Krishna. Actually, one time Radhakrishna Prabhu, our teacher, he mentioned, I still didn't understand the import of that statement. No, I'll try to recollect. He's saying, you are a devotee first, then you are a mother, then you are a wife, then you are a, you know, spoken so-and-so employee in so-and-so company. You're a devotee first, and then see the point. That means, what is your main designation? What is the main thing you're identifying yourself with? Are you identifying yourself as a wife, as a mother, all these things, or identifying yourself as a servant of Krishna? And in that relationship, seeing all other duties in that view, right? It doesn't mean if you see yourself as a servant of Krishna, that means you are not no longer a mother, you are no longer a wife, right? It's not like that. The consciousness with which you deal other duties, right? What is your mainly how do you identify yourself? You know, this is so much degree actually, you know. the gradation. As we make advancement, we will see more and more our consciousness changes in the dealings we do with our family members. The same person's doing the same thing, you know, like Prabhupada said, right?
Outside it will look the same.
Exactly, outside, you know, devotees also go to work, so-called, you know, 8 hours, they do, you know, Microsoft, doing the same thing. Other, if you see from, like, step back and see, it's the same thing. They may even wear jeans, probably, maybe they'll wear tilak for once in a while. Right? Otherwise, it's the same. They will also be working for the deadlines. They will also try to deliver on time. They will also deliver quality, everything. So, what's the difference? Difference is, who is the beneficiary? Whom they are doing it for? The consciousness is very different. Same like, you know, I can be a mother, somebody else can be a mother. What's the difference between a mother who is, you know, not so Krishna conscious versus mother who is Krishna conscious? She sees that, you know, child is a gift of the of God. You know, my duty is to raise the child, nicely discipline him. So it's a very, very good gift to give back to the Krishna and to the society of Krishna consciousness, so the child can preach. Right? This is the consciousness we carry. See, it's so different. Same role, but because of the consciousness. One very nice example, you know, relating to this consciousness. Somebody asked, I hope I can relate this story. There are three people who are working, building a temple. Construction workers. So one person asked for first person. He is, you know, breaking the bricks or something. He asked him, what you are doing? Yeah, what to do, you know, daily I have to get some bread today. So, you know, I'm just doing this thing, you know, so I can get some money or I can drink and have fun rest of the day. And second person he asked. He said then, you know, I'm doing it because... you know, this is something, you know, we are building for the temple. You know, there is something, you know, we are making a temple, church. So, you know, I'm contributing my services to build the church. Third person asked, like, second person asked, and he said somewhere in between, like, you know, I'm getting some, I have to do my duty, you know, I have to do something. This is only I can do, so I'm just doing here. And the third person asked, he said that, you know, this is a temple being built, so I'm making a temple, you know, this temple is going to become, and when my child grows up, he's going to learn here, all the studies here, so, you know, that's my thought, that's my prayer when I do this. So the same activity, but their thoughts are so different. See, first person is mode of ignorance, he's thinking I'll get some money, so I'll drink. Second person is mode of so-called goodness and passion, which is I want to do, get some duty, to get some money, so I can live my life. Third person is a pure devotee, you know, is in a transcendental mode. He's thinking, you know, it's a service to God, I'm rendering some service to God and my child is going to get benefited by this service. See, three of them are breaking the stones, seemingly, right? But what's the difference? So much difference, right? You see the point?
Mm.
Yeah, so it's gradually, as the key is, when we make, as in more and more, when we commit ourselves to devotional service to the Lord, our consciousness changes and we get more and more realizations of how that we are really eternal. It's so much so that there are many devotees who passed away in such a glorious way. When they passed away, they had children who are grown up. There is one lady, she passed away with cancer, but she had a husband and two sons. She trained up both the sons so nicely, and both the sons are completely dedicated to Lord Chaitanya's Krishna consciousness movement. They are initiated and completely, fully, full-time devotees. And husband, of course, was taking care of the wife. Now her duties are done. She said he has been a perfect disciple, perfect wife, perfect mother. Everything is done. And the moment she knows she is going to die in cancer, she is so peaceful. My duties are done. Okay, I am remembering Krishna. I am ready to go. It's not like even then we try to. Prabhupada gives an example. You know how material desires, they don't go away. Even an old man of 95 years, that who is that? Alexander the Great or some king, right? Akbar was a king. Some king, he was debating with his minister. Minister was saying, you know, you should work at an early age, you should try to conquer your desires. Otherwise, you know, it's not something to put off for the old age. Then king was not believing, you know, what do you think, you know, now I have full energy to enjoy, it's very difficult to control, I should rather enjoy, by enjoying, gradually, you know, propensity will go, you know, because I'll get fed up with this and eventually I'll come frustrated and eventually when I become old age, anyway I don't have capacity, so I will stop all this and I will take up to spirituality. Then minister said, no, it's not going to work like that.
Beautiful girl.
Yeah, it doesn't work like that, if you want I'll show you, come. So then king had a beautiful daughter, young daughter. Pink King had a beautiful young daughter. So there was an old, some old person lying in the death, almost about to die in a deathbed. So then the king and minister and the daughter come enter the house. Then king said, minister said, you watch where that man is looking at. You'll watch his eyes when you enter. So they enter, they see. The king noticed that, you know, the eyes are struck looking at the girl. Completely, the young girl. Nobody, you know, not even paying regard to the king, everything. Then they came, they have conversation. Again the minister and the king speaks, you know, so what did you understand? He said, yeah, you know, what you said is true. This guy is old, 95 years, he's about to die, and he has so much lust, he so much wants to enjoy. So, you know, it's not going to work like this. So, you know, that's the point. So why we are discussing this, why it came the old age?
Consciousness about, like,
yeah, so that's the con. Yeah, so imagine this person is also going to die. That lady was also dying, but what was her consciousness? Her consciousness completely surrendered to the Lord and completely peaceful because of that, and completely happy. Finished her duties and to the extent she can do it. And whereas this person is completely materially engrossed, even then trying to still. And even another example, Srila Prabhupada gives, somebody said he was negotiating with the doctor. Doctor, I'll give you $1,000,000. Can you just give me 4 years? I just want. I had some more business to finish up. Just give me 4 years. You know, so long he did, he's 60 years or something. So long he didn't finish. If you give 4 more years, will he finish? You will do the same thing, right? So that's the whole point, you know. Unless we work out all these desires and all these things, the consciousness will not change. Okay, so it will continue today's discussion. 4 to 5. So here Krishna is now going to talk about qualities of living entities, and all these qualities come from him. So let's read these two verses together here. Buddhir jnanam asammoha kshema satyam damashama sukam dukkam bhavo bhavo bhayam cha bhayam eva cha ahimsa samata tushtis tapo danam yasho yasha bhavanti bhava bhutanam mata eva pratakvida. Intelligence, knowledge, freedom from doubt and delusion, forgiveness, truthfulness, control of the senses, control of the mind, happiness and distress, birth, death, fear, fearlessness, non-violence, equanimity, satisfaction, austerity, charity, fame and infamy. All these various qualities of living beings are created by me alone. So Krishna here is talking about some good qualities, some bad qualities. And he's saying all of these qualities in the living beings are created by me. Whatever you see, good or bad, is actually coming from me. So, wonderful point. So, see here, if you read the first line, the different qualities of living entities, be they good or bad, are all created by Krishna and they are described here. This point has a very deep significance. Like, you know, when we see people, when we see somebody has bad qualities, we try to, you know, shy away from them or ignore them or neglect them or reject them, right? Because we are not able to see them as somehow part of Krishna or connected to Krishna. See, this way we can see that, you know, so-called somebody's bad habits are also originating from Krishna. Of course, you know, they may not be they may not be qualified, or rather they may not be ready to work with us right now with those qualities. But with what consciousness we reject them. That's the, you know, that's the point I'm talking about. It's not like, no, this is bad, right? It's not like that. You see that connection with Krishna. And see, you know, because it's all still coming from Krishna, but somehow this person has fallen. Somehow this person has gone into deep ignorance. That's why he's manifesting these qualities. So how can I help him? Help him or her. Okay, so this is a very, very lengthy purport. Prabhupada is elaborating on each of these qualities. So what we'll just do is, we'll read the definition of each of them. I have underlined them, so I think it's easy for me to read instead of saying. Or sometimes when it's lengthier one, I will request you to read. So let's try to follow this, okay? So I'm just going paragraph by paragraph. So first, second paragraph. The first two lines. Intelligence refers to the power to analyze things in their proper perspective. So intelligence talks about analyzing things, discrimination basically. You know, this is good, this is bad. And the second line says, knowledge refers to understanding what is spirit and what is matter. 3-4 lines down, knowledge means knowing the distinction between spirit and matter. So now, you know, Prabhupada is defining everything now. Knowledge means the difference between spirit and matter. If you see, actually they say that Srila Prabhupada kind of gives a definition new definition for all the words we know in English. You know, we know have certain definition of intelligence, certain definition of knowledge, certain different chastity, everything. But if you see this purport, actually if you see, everything is defining Krishna-centric. No, everything, without losing focus on Krishna. It's so amazing, we'll read that. So, Asammoha, next paragraph. Freedom from doubt and delusion can be achieved when one is not hesitant and when he understands the transcendental philosophy. Now, when we understand transcendental philosophy, then all the doubts, everything gets freed. Coming down, Kshama, tolerance and forgiveness should be practiced. One should be tolerant and excuse minor offenses of others. So, both together go hand in hand. Tolerance and forgiveness. We have to tolerate and we have to forgive. Satyam, truthfulness, means that facts should be presented as they are for the benefit of others. Somewhere down, according to social convention, it is said that one can speak the truth only when it's palatable to others. But that is not truthfulness. The truth should be spoken in a straightforward way so that others will understand actually what the facts are. So that is satyam. Actually, Prabhupada gives an example. Brahmana has a quality of this truthfulness. So, he is so simple that actually even if an enemy comes, he can give the secret actually. What, you know, for example, even a thief comes, where is the gold? Brahmana will say, this is the gold. He is saying that's how the quality of truthfulness the Brahmana has. Next paragraph. Control of the senses means the senses should be used for unnecessary personal enjoyment. Of course, you know, that means they should be used only for spiritual advancement. Similarly, one should restrain the mind from unnecessary thoughts. That is called shama. Shama. No, one should, even the mind, one should try to control from unnecessary thoughts. So even in the mind, we should not dwell about sense gratification. Then it's as good as we are doing it. Then coming down, sukham, pleasure or happiness should always be in that which is favorable for the cultivation of spiritual knowledge of Krishna consciousness. And similarly, that which is painful or which causes distress is that which is unfavorable for the cultivation of Krishna consciousness. Anything favorable for development of Krishna consciousness should be accepted and anything unfavorable should be rejected. See, this is the main thing I wanted to say. See, happiness, distress, right, we could define in so many ways. Okay, if you feel some, I don't know how we'll define. If you feel some pleasure in your, when you taste something or so many, in a sensual way, right? But see how he's defining. He's saying, if something is favorable, if you do something which is favorable in Krishna consciousness, that is real happiness. If you reject something which is not favorable, distress is that when something is unfavorable in cultivation of Krishna consciousness. It's all, you know, centered around Krishna. That means when I'm trying to serve Krishna and suddenly, you know, I get some good association. No, something which is enhancing my devotion to Krishna, that is real happiness. But something which is obstruction, like something happens where I'm not able to do some my service, like let's say, you know, there is a, while coming here, there's a traffic jam or so many things. That distress we feel, really, if you feel the distress that, you know, oh, I'm missing the class or I'm missing such and such program, if you feel pain, if you feel distress, that is real distress. Because that is related to Krishna. See, it's all transcendental distress, transcendental happiness. Yeah, same thing. So these last two lines, Prabhupada is paraphrasing the six items of surrender. First two items of surrender are accept things which are favorable to Krishna consciousness, Krishna consciousness, and reject things which are unfavorable to Krishna consciousness. The rest of it are humility and dainyam and accepting Krishna as the only protector, devotion. Yeah. Okay. So then next paragraph, bhava, birth, should be understood to refer to the body. As far as the soul is concerned, there is neither birth or death. Okay, so yeah, that's very clear, right? And then okay, next he is talking about bhaya. So it's if you want to get free from anxiety, then the best course is to understand Krishna and to be situated always in Krishna consciousness. In that way we will be free from all fear. In Srimad Bhagavatam 11.2.37, it is stated, Bhayam vidyabhi niveshata syat. Fear is caused by our absorption, the illusory energy. See the point? So fundamental. It's very, very deep. Fear is caused due to our absorption in illusory energy. It's simple. So whenever we are afraid of something, we should think, you know, we are know, because of material, something which we are identifying materially, which we want it, or something we should be losing it, that's why we are afraid. But if you are completely fixed in Krishna consciousness, there is no fear. Like, there are so many examples, right? Haridas Thakur has been beaten in 21 marketplaces. Even Prahlad Maharaj was attempted to kill. He was not afraid because he's so Krishna conscious, right? That's why absorption in Krishna consciousness makes us fearless. That's why it's called Abhaya Charanaravinda, right? Prabhupada's name is also Abhaya Charan, Abhaya. Once you have taken shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, is fearless. But those who are free from the illusory energy, those who are confident that they are not the material body. See, this is the point. Mataji was asking, Sangeeta Mataji. Those who are confident that they are not the material body, that they are spiritual parts of the Supreme Lord, and who are therefore engaged in transcendental service of the Supreme Lord, have nothing to fear. See, the point Prabhupada is saying, if you are convinced you are not the body, you are going to engage in devotional service. That's what I was saying, right? To the extent we are convinced we are not the body, to that extent we have determination in Krishna consciousness. That's the same point. I was just paraphrasing from whatever I heard, but I think that's so nice, Prabhupada. We are able to see it. And that person doesn't have anything to fear. This fear is a condition of persons who are not in Krishna consciousness. Yeah. Abhayam, fearlessness is possible only for one in Krishna consciousness. Then ahimsa, non-violence, means that one should not do anything which will put others into misery or confusion. Wow, see another definition of non-violence. We only think non-violence means, oh, cutting animals, right? We don't do it, we are already non-violent. But he's saying we should not even do anything which put others in misery or confusion. Suddenly, I remember one incident, you know, I don't have this consciousness, but that time when I was very new, some incident happened, you know, I think with my mentor or something, some incident happened where I was bewildered or confused. And then because of that I behaved wrongly or something, then I went and apologized, you know, sorry, you know, because I was confused and I didn't know what to do and somehow I misbehaved, I'm sorry. Then actually my mentor was saying, sorry, no, I'm sorry, you know, I put you through anxiety. Mm-hmm. That's my mistake. You know, I caused you to, you know, feel like that. See, that's the point, you know. We may feel, you know, it's that person's problem. You know, they don't know how to handle things, you know, like that. But, you know, we have to reflect and see, you know, did I cause anything? Because we can only change ourselves. We can only take responsibility, right? Only when we take responsibility, when we take introspect and do, then only we can improve ourselves. So we should always see, you know, did I cause anything like that for that person to behave like that? You know, is there anything which I can change so that, you know, it may be a different effect for them? Another incident is that Chitraketu Maharaj, right, he wanted a son. He had so many wives and then he didn't have a son from any of them. Finally, for some reason, one wife, he had a son. Then Narada Muni, he advised him, you know, you don't have a son. You know, he'll cause you happiness, at the same time he'll cause you distress. You can name him actually Sukadukki or some name like that, Sukadukki. No, you name him like that. He said, okay, no problem, I can't even imagine how having a child could give me in distress, but you know, it's okay, you can keep saying like that, I want to go through this. So he had this child. What happened? Because of this over attachment with the child, because he had after a long time, so much he tried, after a long time he had, so he became very absorbed with the child and gave special affection to that wife who gave that child, and because of that he neglected all the other wives. That caused, these other wives are also very good devotees, actually they're all very pious ladies, very good devotees. But what happened, that triggered envy in them, because you know, now we are not getting what we used to get earlier. That inflamed envy in them, enraged them such a way that they planned the whole thing and they killed the child actually. They gave him poison, killed the child. Then when the father, mother got to know this, then they started, you know, they understood, oh, what Narada Muni told. You know, now it's, we are so attached, when you are so attached, when you lose something, you become so much distressed. Now we are so distressed. So the point related to what I'm saying is, Chitraketu Maharaj was responsible for creating, inflaming that envy in them. It's not like, you know, oh, they have the bad quality, they killed the child, they are responsible. He is also responsible for causing that behavior in them. No, see, that's the point I'm saying. Okay, so then, continuing further, samatha, equanimity, refers to freedom from attachment and aversion. No, freedom from attachment and aversion. Well, that's very interesting. To be very much attached or to be very much detached is not the best. This material world should be accepted without attachment and aversion. This is a very, very tough thing to do. It's like, you know, if very, very, very attached to material world means we are karmis, materialists. You know, you just want to enjoy. We are very attached to enjoying, you know. I'm just attached to going to see places and all these things, whatever it means to do for the materialistic people. Right? That is karmis. To aversion means impersonalists. They're saying, okay, I don't have anything to do with this world. I don't have anything to do with relationships. I don't have anything to do with families. Neti, neti, nothing is there. Finally, we are all one and same and nothing is, there is no duality. That is impersonalist. If we are too attached to material world or too detached, it's not our heart, I think once we discuss this, our heart will become very hard. So hard-heartedness is not favorable for bhakti. Bhakti means our heart should be soft like butter. So we should be in the middle. We are not attached, we are not detached. So how do we practically do it is, we take things in the world as needed for the service of the Lord. Otherwise, we are not interested in them. That's how we neither be attached nor be detached. Right? We are attached for Krishna's sake.
It is like walking on a rope.
Yes, we have to walk on the rope and be careful. You know, this side is another lake, this side is other lake. We don't know where we are going to fall. So it's a very important point, you know. It's very difficult actually, you know, because as people, even as practitioners of bhakti, sometimes we don't be cautious about this, and internally we have this impersonalistic attitude. You know, so that's why when Prabhupada's pranam mantra is called Nirvishesha Shunyavadi, right? He came to extinguish impersonalism and voidism. You know, initially when devotees read that pranam mantra, we feel, oh, it's outside people, you know, oh, he's talking about Buddhists, he's talking about impersonalists. But actually these tendencies are there within us. He's talking about these tendencies within our devotees, practicing devotees. We have this tendency to be impersonal, tendency to, you know, feel, you know, I don't know voidism how much we have, but, you know, we have the tendency to kind of, you know, negate everything and say, oh, there is nothing. Impersonalism. Can you reflect in your own lives how we manifest impersonalism? Just for sharing, because from that time I'm talking. How do we manifest impersonalism in our lives? From your own example, some incidents which you can share.
See, I would say impersonalism to me is if I do some work without my heart in it, it's impersonalism to me because I'm not connecting to it. So I do it just for the sake of doing it and not give my 100% to it. It's just I have to get it done. So there is no connection. And the bhakti is connection with anything. I mean, like, it's the connection. So if there is connection to even any work, even if it should be mundane work of anything, to anything from lower to any of the work we do throughout the day, if I have that dedication, if I have that thing, then it becomes then bhakti.
So impersonal because...
So when a person actually loses the dearest one, that's when, because especially my mother is what I'm seeing now.
Yeah.
She's in a, like, what you're saying, quiet kind of
thing. Yeah, exactly.
There's nothing going on. Like, it's like just pin drop silence inside her mind. Sometime. And again, it's like shifting between this and that. So at this point, like, considering, oh, Thibya Bhagwan, I was like, really, but he didn't listen to my prayer. In intent prayer where I'm like constantly asking for forgiveness, but he didn't forgive me. That's when, like, it is pushing her to a place where she is saying, you know, I'm more now, like, I do not have any mind, basically. Now, it's just Sunya. That's what she says, like, it's Sunya. That's where I'm like, so when that Sunya thing actually is very realized, it's not like she doesn't have the feeling for Krishna. She does have that. But then when she's like that, like Abhiman, like I'm really angry with him now. So I would rather be in that Sunya state where you don't exist for me now. So that basically that Sunya is where it meant, that Sunya Vati thing.
Yeah.
It's really within us.
Yes. But sometimes, you know, we shy away, turn away from the Lord, saying, you know, you don't exist for me. Yeah, we create a world where He's not there. Yeah, that itself is voidism. Yeah, that's a good point.
That's very strongly which I'm she's like shutting down everything now.
Yeah.
To play the bhajan, don't. It is dragging me there. I do not want to see him. You know, I do not want to listen about him. I have listened so much, but it's not working for me. That is what she is. Like, we are working a lot on that now. Every day I'm talking to her, and then I send some kirtan message, because kirtan will somehow to drag your mind to that, right? So I'm sending this kirtan to my sister, just play it. Even if she is closing the door, play outside, so that some vibe will go inside, and it will, you know, it will bring her into that, instead of like just I have nothing to do with this world, neither any world, nor with me, nor anybody.
Hmm.
So that complete shutdown from the world, is that why it is
invisible? Very good, very good point. Thank you, Mataji. Yeah.
No, it's about like, it's a strong thing which everybody...
Yes, we all have it in within us. Just, yes, exactly. Correct, very good. When we have something very dearmost lost, that's when we'll have volcano avoid, if we want to say it. You know, where we feel like, you know, how much I chanted for Krishna is not there exactly when I need him, you know. No devotees are not there. Nobody is there for me, you know. What's the point?
So every single day, so to work towards it is realizing that, okay, about other than this devotional thing also, knowing that every single day you are dying. So that when actually the death comes, you are already dying, because the moment you are born, like when the like you are cutting the log, basically the log is cutting. The log when falls down is when we realize, okay, the log fell down. But the cutting has already started the moment you are born. So every day when you consciously realize towards that and you work towards the real purpose of your life, it probably will be not a very big shock for you.
Yeah, exactly. Anyone. Yes, exactly.
But where I stand, where my entire family we stand, is going to take a lot of time studying and working on it to realize.
Yes.
Whatever realization, but because we are not able to deal with our entire life now. Like, to day-to-day life, activities also has getting hampered. It's a very tough situation, and you know, it's like the whole world doesn't exist. Just the world, we are there and God didn't take care of us. But the misery is out there for everyone, but then still, it's like, when you walk through that, the pain hurts you.
Yeah. It's a very nice point. Yes. Yeah. So I think we can. Any examples of impersonalism? Like, I can say for my own thing, you know. See, when we know what is personal, we can know what is impersonal. Generally, you say you can understand a thing by explaining the opposite, right? Personal means, you know, at least we should have experienced something in our life, then we can know what is personal. Generally, normally we don't do, because everybody we deal with are impersonal. We don't know what it means personal, but at least if you have met somebody who is very pure, like, you know, saints and sadhus, like, you know, or spiritual teachers and things like that, you can feel immediately what is personalism. Like, you know, the way they interact with you can feel, you know, they know you exactly, or, you know, there is a connection. They care about you, not about the body, about your job, nothing. They care about your soul. They care, basically, you know, you, the soul. That feeling you will get, you know, that's very personal. And they talk to you the way you would, you know, the personal dealings, like between, let's say, two disciples, right? The spiritual master exchanges differently with different disciples. That's personal. Personal means there is individuality, right? You know, I have certain taste, I have some nature. Certain other disciple has certain taste, certain nature. So this spiritual master will not say, okay, one rule for everyone, sit and talk. Then it's impersonal, right? You are very personal, you know, okay, you like this thing, you want to do this, right? You see, that's point. That's personal. Okay, but examples of impersonalism in my life, I can feel day to day with my children. Like, you know, sometimes they do something, or, you know, I'll be, like, they need attention or something, like, they do something they want to show to me, right? Suddenly I'll be doing something, they'll call, Amma, Amma, see this, and then sometimes I'll be doing something, I say, yeah, like that. Now I will not even go there and see, and, you know, that's personal, right? Go there and see and say, oh, you did a good job. That's personal. But I do something and say, yeah, okay, good job. I keep doing my stuff, right? That's impersonal, right? So clear. So this all we have here.
So another example, but I think is when somebody close to you is affected, you are very affected. When somebody, you know, it happens all over the world, and you are impersonal.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Yeah, impersonal.
So, but that's attachment and detachment.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
When I'm like too much mad about the kids, I feel like, who am I to tell them? I feel like that, and I will leave for a couple of minutes, and then I feel, who am I? What am I thinking? I am their mother. I need to teach them, so I am not going to leave her. Let her do this. In that way, I feel
yeah.
A little bit, I feel like, no, nothing to do. I can't do
it. Yeah, basically, better. Like, it's not my duty anyway. Lord will take care. Yeah.
I don't know whether it
Yeah, we abandon our duty also, thinking, you know, it's hard. When it's too hard, we feel like, you know, maybe it's not my duty. Right? That's when it's easy, you know, we feel, oh, it's my duty, I can do it. It gets too hard, then, you know, we want to resign from our job. But for a mother, there's no choice. Okay. So, continuing further, equanimity we did, impersonalism, samatha, equanimity we did, right? Okay. Tusti satisfaction means that one should not be eager to gather more and more material goods for unnecessary by unnecessary activity. One should be satisfied with whatever is obtained by the grace of the Supreme Lord. That is called satisfaction. Yeah, this is like, you know, so we don't over endeavor. We don't like, you know, okay, I want so much money for my future, for my kids, for my this thing, so much. Just minimum whatever it is, and just continue, you know, main focus should be Krishna consciousness. Tapas means austerity or penance. There are many rules and regulations in the Vedas which apply here, like rising early in the morning and taking bath. Sometimes it's very troublesome to rise early in the morning, but whatever voluntary trouble one may suffer in this way is called penance. So, you know, the same way, you know, rising early, going to Mangalarti is like hard work. But if you do it for the pleasure of the Lord, then it's tapasya and it's going to increase our Krishna consciousness. Continuing further, as far as charity is concerned, one should give 50% of his earnings to some good cause. And what is that good cause? It is that which is conducted in terms of Krishna consciousness. That is not only a good cause, but that's the best cause. Because Krishna is good, his cause is also good. Thus, charity should be given to a person who is engaged in Krishna consciousness. It's very clear. Saying, you know, Krishna consciousness is the best thing for the world, for everyone. So whoever is doing that activity, if they need money, if we can help them, that's the best charity. Okay, 50% we should give. Continuing further, Yashas fame, next paragraph, should be according to Lord Chaitanya, who said that a man is famous when he is known as a great devotee. That is real fame. If one has become a great man in Krishna consciousness and it is known, then he is truly famous. One who does not have such a fame is infamous. Wow, see, this when I read it first time, I was very impressed. So everybody wants fame. There's so many, okay, Bill Gates, you know, he did so many things, so he's famous. And this person donated so much, he's famous. So many types of fame, but that's no fame. Because they're going to be in the records today, tomorrow they're gone. But if somebody is famous as a good devotee of the Lord, that's eternal fame. Right? So that's what, you know, if you want to become famous, we should try to be good devotee of the Lord, so people will talk of us as good devotees. Okay, next paragraph in the middle, we can read this from now. For one, can we read some of us, Swami Prabhu? Now for one who wants
to advance in Krishna consciousness, Krishna creates all these qualities, but the person develops them himself from within. One who engages in the devotional service of the Supreme Lord develops all the good qualities as arranged by the Supreme Lord. Of whatever we find, good or bad, origin is Krishna. Nothing can manifest itself in this material world which is not Krishna. That is knowledge. Although we know that things are differently situated, we should realize that everything flows from Krishna. Mm.
So, a couple of important points. Prabhupada is saying that as we advance in Krishna consciousness, these qualities will develop. Krishna will manifest those qualities within us. And the person develops from within. So if we feel, oh, I am not non-violent, or, you know, I am not equanimous or equanimity, I don't have equanimity, I don't have fearless, all these things, if you are afraid, we don't need to worry. The solution is to become fixed up in devotional service and qualities will manifest. It is said that Rupad Maharaj tells this example. These qualities are like jewels. So Krishna likes to see, like, for example, all the ladies, especially for festivals like Janmashtami and all, they deck up nicely, right? They wear so much jewelry to look more beautiful. You know, ladies look beautiful, they put more jewelry. Not too much, but, you know, very decent and, you know, very nice, fine jewelry. Then their beauty comes out more better. So like that, Krishna likes to see his devotees more beautiful. So he decorates his devotees with this beautiful gems of qualities. No, if somebody is very humble, somebody is knowledgeable, somebody is tolerant, somebody is forgiving, it attracts our hearts, right? Immediately you feel like there's something, or this person is out of this world, right? So that Krishna also wants to be pleased with that person. So he decorates that person such a way that he becomes more beautiful in front of the Lord. So Krishna himself takes responsibility to give these qualities to the devotee. And the other point Prabhupada is saying, whatever good or bad is coming from Krishna. So last line is very important. He's saying, although we know that things are differently situated, that means we know somebody is manifesting certain quality which is wrong, whatever, that something is it, we should realize that everything flows from Krishna. This ties into the initial thing which we are talking about, right? When we reject somebody saying this is bad, we know this is still coming from Krishna. We should not reject that part. Yeah. Okay, so we'll go to the next verse. Next couple of verses are very small verses. Mahashaya sapta purve chatvaro manavastata madbhava manasa jata isham loka ima praja. The seven great sages and before them the four other great sages and the manus, progenitors of mankind, come from me, born from my mind, and all the living beings populating the various planets descend from them. So here Krishna is actually giving, Prabhupada says in the purport, is a genealogy of history of mankind. So how originally things came, like from him what all happened. So first, I think the sequence is, first four great sages came, after that seven great sages, after that the Manus, yeah, all these people came. So seven great sages I have written down here, I don't know whether you would be interested in writing down, but it's okay. Yeah, four great sages Prabhupada says in the purport, this we can read that. They are Shanaka, Shanandana, Sanatana, Sanat Kumara, Brahma Kumaras. Four Kumaras. So we'll read like last half of the purport. Brahma underwent penance.
Brahma underwent penance for 1,000 years of the demigods before he realized by the grace of Krishna how to create. Then from Brahma came Sanaka, Sananda, Sanatana and Sanat Kumara. Then Rudra and then the seven sages. And in this way all the Brahmanas and Kshatriyas are born out of the energy of the Supreme Personality of God. Brahma is known as Pitamaha, the grandfather. The Krishna is known as
Prapitamaha,
the father of the grandfather. That is stated in the 11th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, 11.39.
Yeah. So here the sequence is given. Like, so from first initially from the navel of the Lord came the lotus flower. On the top of it, Brahma got manifested. Brahma got created.
Can you read out the seven sages' names just
quickly? Just name, okay, I'll read out. It's Vashishta, Vishwamitra, Bharadvaja, Gautami, Atri, Kashyapa, and Jamadagni. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Yeah. So then after that, four Kumaras, so Brahma Kumaras. Then after that came Rudra, Shiva, and then the seven great sages. So in this way, and then after that Manus come. There are 14 Manus in the day of Brahma. Each Manu is in charge of certain period during the day. He rules that period. So right now it's the seventh Manu going on. So that's the point. There are 14 Manus who take care of the day of Brahma. That's why Krishna is called Prapitamaha. He is the father of the grandfather.
Five,
oh, you wrote down.
Vashishta, Vishwamitra, Gautama.
Bharadvaja is third. Bharadvaja, Gautami, Atri, Kashyapa, Jamadagni. Okay. Text number 7. So Krishna says the only way to know about him is through disciplic succession. So let's see. Etam vibhutim yogam cha mama yoveti tatvata so vikalpena yogena yujyate natra samshaya. One who is factually convinced of this opulence and mystic power of mind engages in unalloyed devotional service. For this there is no doubt. So he's saying one who is convinced of my opulence engages in my unalloyed devotional service. There is no doubt. Without any doubt he will engage in devotional service. This is what we were talking. That's why Krishna is revealing his opulences. If you read this purport carefully, Prabhupada gives about 6 points. It's a very, very beautiful purport. I think we'll try to make it as bullets and put it in our website. about how this opulences of the Lord will help in devotional service. So I will noted down the points. I'll try to maybe read those points. Or rather, we can read the. Well, how do we do it? Okay, shall we can read the first paragraph and the last paragraph, then we'll try to find out the points. So okay, look, you can watch out for the points Prabhupada is trying to say how the opulences of the Lord will help in devotional service. You look at that phrases, okay? We'll start with first paragraph.
The highest summit of spiritual perfection is knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Unless one is firmly convinced of the different opulences of the Supreme Lord, he cannot engage in devotional service. Generally, people know that God is great, but they do not know in detail how God is great. Here are the details. If one knows factually how God is great, then naturally he becomes a surrendered soul and engages himself in the devotional service of the Lord. When one factually knows the opulence of the Supreme, there is no alternative but to surrender to him. This factual knowledge can be known from the descriptions in Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita and similar literatures.
So what are the 3 points here in the first paragraph? There are 3 points. The first one is, unless one is firmly convinced of the different opulence of the Supreme Lord, he cannot engage in devotional service. Right? So unless we are convinced that there are opulences for the Lord, we cannot even begin devotional service. Mm-hmm. The next point is coming last 3 lines. He says, one who knows factually how the God is great, then naturally he becomes surrendered soul and engages himself in devotional service to the Lord. So not only he begins devotional service, he completely surrenders himself. That is second point. Third point is, one who factually knows the opulence of the Supreme Lord, there is no alternative but to surrender to him. That means he doesn't have any doubt. After he begins to surrender, he will not hesitate again. It's the same point, but there are more detail, more depths. Right? There are more layers. Okay. So now let's read the last paragraph. There are 3 more points here.
These are some of the opulences of the Supreme Lord. When one is firmly convinced of them, he accepts Krishna with great faith and without any doubt, and he engages in devotional service. All this particular knowledge is required in order to increase one's interest in the loving devotional service of the Lord. One should not neglect to love.
Understand
fully how great Krishna is. For by knowing the greatness of Krishna, one will be able to be fixed in sincere devotional service.
So same thing again in different ways. So fourth point he's saying, the opulence of the Supreme Lord make him firmly convinced. He accepts Krishna with great faith and without a doubt, and he engages in devotions. So there will not be any more doubts when he is convinced about the opulences. And the fifth point he is saying is that it will increase one's interest in loving devotion service to the Lord. That means one becomes more and more enthused about becoming lover of the Lord. Sixth one he says, we should not hesitate, understand fully how great Krishna is. For by knowing the greatness of the Lord, one will be able to be fixed in sincere devotion service. Become fixed, nishta. So there is no doubt, there is no wavering, there is no hesitation. Same point again. But you know, different ways in saying the same thing. So when we know about the opulences and become convinced and we believe them and somehow we have the realization, then it will help us become fixed in our devotional service. If at all we feel ourselves wavering or we feel like, you know, half and half, or like, you know, one time I have faith, one time I don't have faith. That means we should hear more and more from Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam and literatures where we talk about the opulences of the Lord. So when we hear about the opulences of the Lord, we feel, oh, God is great. You know, he can take care of me. All I have to do is just surrender to him. So that conviction will come more and more firmer. That's why hearing is so important, right? When we hear, then all the doubts, everything Krishna removes from within. So we become fixed in his devotional service. Okay, so any questions or comments or points you want to share? So you feel from whatever number of times we are all associating together by hearing, has it helped in becoming fixed more in Krishna consciousness, or has it helped in removing some doubts? Because we are hearing about Krishna through Bhagavad Gita, right? So did it cause that effect? That's what I'm trying to. We wanted to share ourselves. Or how do we feel? Like, what is your realization about this point, that, you know, while hearing the opulences of the Lord will help us become convinced and fixed up in devotional service? Did we experience that? That's what I wanted to hear from all of you.
Obviously.
By discussing like 10 chapters now?
For me, it's mostly through the stories of how he has saved the devotees, and that's where you can see everything was shine through. Like, you know, when he saves Draupadi, or when he serves Sudama, or when he helps Arjuna, that's when, and when we discuss all those stories, I feel, oh, God is just beyond great.
Yeah. Okay, very nice. So that specifically appeals to you, and that specifically increases your faith that, you know, he is going to protect me. It's very nice. Anybody wants to share?
Today only I was hearing Mataji chapter Srimad Bhagavatam, now came to 10 and chapter, I think 38 or 39, when Akrura was sent to Lord's house to bring him. So, you know, when he comes, the Lord Balram and Lord Krishna, you know, they both, you know, like washed his feet, and then, you know, the massage and all these things. So, you know, that was really interesting. Even
yeah.
Lord is doing, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. No, we have certain, you know, attachment to position designated. Sometimes we feel some menial service, somebody, like, you know, for example, like a mother, you know, sometimes you have to clean a potty. Sometimes Prabhu says, you know, I don't want to do, you do it. No, we have certain, you know, sometimes, you know, we feel some, what to say, restrictions or limitations.
Mm.
But if you see, the Lord is, you know, is greatest in everything, as you are saying, right? He can, he is the greatest servant, if you can say, you know, of his devotees. He doesn't have any this thing like, you know, I am the most opulent Lord, you know, I own everything, why I should wash his feet? Is one of his opulence is renunciation, right? Yeah. Any more things you want to share? How hearing about Krishna has helped you?
I want to know is, how would you develop love when you are actually in a place of misery? When he was like, you want to cry out loudly that Trahimam, because I just can't live here. How can you develop love for Krishna? That's when you are like trying to save yourself, that you cannot save, definitely. But you are praying for that. But then how do you develop that love where you are surely this pain doesn't matter to you? The physical pain. Because
no, so you're saying when we are crying out of misery, it's selfish. We want to feel better, right? Is that what you're saying? You want to do the crying out of love instead of out of misery?
Uh-huh. Two things actually. Like how you pray. The prayer is when you know this place, like you are sinking in the Mahasagar, basically in the ocean, you are sinking, and then that moment you open your eyes and you see that this is what the reality of every one of us here is. Like we are sinking in this material ocean, and then you want to basically raise your hand, please save me, Krishna, because I wanna. This is what my situation is. And this, how do you develop the love, basically love where you don't actually care about you being sinking or whatever. You know, that is totally, it's not in your mind. It's just that you don't think anything
about. Yeah, I see. The point is, well, basically you're saying, initially, or rather, when we are in miserable state, we may cry out to the Lord because we are miserable. We don't want to be in the state of misery. Right? So that is still selfish because we want something for ourselves. But how do we come to the stage where we cry out to the Lord just for the sake of crying out, just for the sake of loving the Lord, unconditional? Yeah. So it starts from crying out when we are feeling misery first. So when we do that, when we are feeling miserable, when we know that, you know, my misery can be cured only by the Lord, nobody else. At least if we come to that conclusion first. You know, many of us cannot come to that conclusion. Still, we have so many shelters. It's all about having having Krishna as our only shelter. Can we come to that state first? We seek so many of our shelters. Like, you know, some people who are depressed, they drink, they, you know, they go watch movies so that they can forget their depression, or they party. No, there's so many options. But, you know, can we be pious enough that only pious people take shelter of Krishna in the sake of misery? So that also requires qualification. So if you can do it, you know, it's not a simple thing. If you are doing it, that's very good. Because of that misery, it intensifies that calling out. And that eagerness to have shelter of Krishna, Krishna sees it as a sincere call for him, and he reciprocates very promptly. Like how child is, you know, child will be playing somewhere, and usually child want attention. So the way they seek attention is they cry. So sometimes, you know, mother knows, many times, you know, it's for attention, okay, yeah, yeah, you know, he's safe, you know, he's just making, he's making a tantrum to get me there. But sometimes if something danger happens and the child cries very loudly, and immediately mother knows, you know, this is not a normal cry. Something, my child is in danger, she drops whatever she's having and she is going to go and help the child. That's what this cry is. When we are in so much pain, when we know there is no other shelter but Krishna and there is no happiness for me, nothing, I'm not seeking any, there is no way out of my situation, and with that intensity we take shelter of Krishna, with that intensity Krishna reciprocates, knowing that, you know, this child doesn't have any other option but me, I have to go rescue the child. Right? So that's how it starts. Then when Krishna comes for our rescue, then he gives devotees, he gives association, he gives books, everything. Then we have to show that intensity by taking shelter of the process of devotional service. By taking shelter of chanting, taking shelter of that intensity should come out in our chanting, in our reading, in our association of devotees, in our, you know, eating only prasadam, following the regulative principles, everything. You see the point? It's not like intensity comes once in a while, I cry and rest of the time. You know, the intensity will manifest in our actions. Right? You see, we will be so diligent about principles of Krishna consciousness that if we little mistake we make, we feel like, you know, it's, you know, we should feel very regret. Like, you know, I wasted my life. We should feel like that. That much if we are so eager. If you're not eager, then it doesn't matter. If I, once in a while I watch a movie, how does it matter, you know? You see the point? See the difference? If we are intense, then even a small one moment wasted, we feel very bad. If we are not eager and intense, it doesn't matter if I waste 3 hours watching a movie. Right? So that's the point. You know, that the whole thing is, it helps us become more eager and intense for the Lord. And gradually when Krishna reciprocates, when we take shelter of the processes, then we purify our heart. Then the same intensity, if hopefully we have it, then we can have it really to attain the Lord, not because I am feeling misery. Because Krishna, I am missing you, I want to come back to you.
So like the person who said that a lady who died versus Prabhupada leaving his body, goal would be same? Like goal would be same and destination would be the same? You know, what I am saying is like Prabhupada, like no one can reach up to him, but then is he like, you have to go up to that point to get liberated, or in this life also it is possible?
Yeah, there are many devotees, you know, she also, I cannot speculate, you know, where she went. But the way in which they go, we can see it definitely, you know, she is definitely going to a place which is going to enhance her devotional service. You know, either it's spiritual world or somewhere else where she can take it up, take up, increase her devotional service. You know, so yeah, but definitely it is, it's Prabhupada himself promised, if you just follow 4 regulative principles and chant your 16 rounds dutifully, rest of the life, you can go back to Krishna. Prabhupada promised. It's not about my, you know, qualification. That's the whole thing, you know. Even if we made any advancement in Krishna consciousness, we should realize it's not because of my endeavor. It's only because of mercy. Mercy of spiritual master, mercy of Krishna, it's like, and their mercy comes in proportionate to my endeavor. It's not like, you know, I keep my hands closed, anyway mercy will come. You see the point? Right? Whatever advancement we make, it's because of mercy, but at the same time mercy will come proportionate to our intensity, our eagerness and our endeavor. You see the point? So that, but at the same time, at the end of the day, I cannot say I became pure devotee. I became pure devotee only because Krishna purified me. Right? So yeah, so it's all about Krishna. If Krishna decides, he can take, he wants you back, he can take you, he can do any time. Only thing is, we are just trying to appeal to Krishna the whole life by sincerely devoting ourselves. I am preparing myself, Krishna, see, in these ways, I want to choose you, I want to love you, I want to show you how I am serious about coming to you. That's what we are just showing. We are showing a token. Like, you know, by coming into spiritual world, you need a visa, so we are just giving some $100, we are trying to pull up $1 every day and trying to get some $100. But that's not the price we pay to go to Vaikuntha, right? It's a very different price. But he is just giving, you know, you just show me that you are really serious about me. That's what Krishna wants. We cannot do much more beyond that. Right? We cannot say, you know, oh, I became eligible to go back to spiritual world. We cannot. it's all mercy of the Lord. Even after doing all we can do, you know, Lord may decide that, you know, just you have to wait some more time. We cannot do anything. We are the ones who, you know, left the Lord. So what can we do? Now we cannot demand, you know, let me in. You better let me in. But our Lord is very merciful and loving, we know. He's Bhavagrahi and he's missing us on top of everything. And because we are going through Guru Parampara, Prabhupada said once, actually, you know, you have to follow all the rules and regulations, 90% whatever I've told. Otherwise you cannot go back to spiritual world. Then disciples got all shattered. Oh my God, 90% of how will I, so many this thing, so many, you know, nitty gritty details, how can we do, American people, we are so conditioned, all this. Prabhupada, you know, is there any way? Then he thought about it and said, okay, 75%, whatever I said, just do 75% of whatever I said, you can go back. Then he left the room, up lecture hall. Then still devotees are discussing everything. Then finally, you know, he got the message to Prabhupada, and again, I don't know exactly the numbers, I have the story, I should remember that. Then again he said, okay, nothing less than 65%, nothing less than that. Then again they were saying, no, okay, 65% is also too much, we cannot do. Then Prabhupada said, okay, don't do anything, just hold on to my dhoti, I will take you back. I know the key to the back door to Vaikuntha, I will take you, just hold on to my dhoti. See, that's what, you know, they can, we just have to follow, you know, our spiritual master's instructions and just be faithful and get their mercy and blessings. They can take us back. And whatever we do is a token to show that, you know, I am serious, that's all. Okay, Mataji? Okay, we'll end here. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Jai.